You're listening to Take Care, a health and wellness show from WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith. Today, we're picking apart the topic of health information. Part of the issue with finding the best health information is that it can often seem contradictory, and we're not just talking about the latest advice on whether your baby should sleep on its back or stomach.
When it comes to medical reversal, things can become grave pretty fast. For example, a widely used prescription medication can be taken off the shelves after it's found not to help or even to hurt patients.
Now, in a perfect world, medicine should progress in an orderly fashion, with good practices being replaced by better ones. But we're not living in a perfect world. Our next guest explains why medical reversals are harmful and avoidable. Dr. Vinay Prasad is a hematologist-oncologist and associate professor of medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. He spoke with our producer, Leah Landry.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
When it comes to medicine, our understanding of what's best for a patient can change over time due to new advances made in research, clinical trials, things like that. You write that it makes sense for good practices to be replaced by better ones and so on and so forth. But you also say that that isn't always the case. Could you expand on that for us?
Yeah, I think many of us wish and think of medicine as a series of incremental advances. What's new today was better than what we had yesterday. And I think for many things, that narrative is correct. That's true. That does capture much of biomedicine. But there's another type of story in biomedicine we don't talk quite as much about. And those are practices that we deploy, we extol, we use for many, many years that in retrospect are found to be no better or even worse than a prior standard of care or even in some cases doing nothing.
So what is medical reversal?
We define medical reversal as just those things, the missteps in medicine. These aren't things that were replaced with something better. These were practices that in retrospect we probably never should have done. If we had had the good studies up front, we might never have done them, and they probably were no better or worse than doing nothing or doing what we did before.
So I always like to get the historical context behind this. So I'm wondering, is the problem of medical reversal a recent one, or has this been ongoing?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it has very likely been there throughout all of medical practice. Actually, probably the bulk of medical practice for thousands of years consisted of many, many interventions that just simply did not work, that didn't do what we thought they did. You can think about bloodletting or trepanation, which is drilling holes into skulls and all sorts of what are now thought barbaric practices. But in recent years, we still continue to see some new drugs and devices and surgeries being deployed, lacking good evidence. And we still see some practices that we've recently adopted being contradicted. And that's what we kind of focus on in our research. Why are we still making these mistakes? Is it possible that we can adopt more of what actually works and less of what doesn't?
You write about a lot of instances where doctors just won't drop something, even if it is shown not to help or in some cases even to harm. This is a naive sounding question, but I think it's a good place to start. Why would anyone continue to call for a procedure or, let's say, prescribe a drug if research is telling them it's just not working?
Yeah, and I think this is a very good question, and it gets at sort of the heart of the psychology of a physician. I think most doctors, the vast majority of physicians, are very well-intentioned. They're truly doing what they believe in their heart is best for patients. They've done that, you know, day in and day out for their careers. And I think it's very difficult when you tell someone who's been doing something for a decade or more, and they've truly believed they helped their patients, and they may even have gotten some anecdotal reinforcement from people who say, boy, that really did feel like it worked for me. And you couple that with just a small financial incentive to do that procedure, I think that combination is a highly addictive substance. And breaking that habit in a physician is often very difficult. And simply generating better and more credible evidence is often not enough to break that addiction. And so we see tremendous reluctance among providers who have done things for a long period of time to let it go, even when faced with very clear, indisputable, very strong evidence that it doesn't work.
How hard is it to, let's say, make a medical reversal, to get people who were essentially believing that we were in a good place with something to now go back to something that could be seen as antiquated?
or to simply to just to de-adopt the practice that doesn't work. I think it's very difficult. It's difficult in several ways. One, it's difficult to build the consensus to even test these practices. You know, the reversals that we've documented are things that at least some courageous physicians felt like maybe it doesn't do what we think it does, and they were willing to put it to rigorous testing. Even to build that consensus, that's an arduous task that takes years, and in some fields, that consensus never builds, and we don't even test it. Then the next step is you test it, and you get a result that runs counter to what you may have felt before, or a bunch of data that was really of a lower quality of data, uncontrolled, anecdotal, sort of ways in which data is not as good as the contradictory study. And then you have to get people to believe the contradictory study and to change their practice patterns. And that often requires some nudges, maybe from payers saying that, you know, we're not going to always reimburse for this unless you have a good justification why this practice is different in this situation. It may require a nudge from professional organizations to say, we have to reevaluate how we think about this. And getting those nudges requires, you know, the work of politics. It's changing minds and changing attitudes, and that's very difficult. So at every step along the way, there is resistance to medical reversal, I think.
So are there a few key things that you could point to that's really causing the problem? Is it the clinical trials or pressure for hospitals to look like they're on the forefront of treatment?
I think that you're hitting the nail on the head, that it's, you know, what is causing this problem? Why haven't we learned the lessons of the past? Why isn't more of what we adopt enduring and actually works? And the simple reason is we jump onto new therapies or practices before we've done the conclusive, robust studies. We do that in part because we're enthusiastic about new things. I think human beings are incredibly enthusiastic. That's one of the best things about us. That's a good thing. And we also do it because all of the for-profit motives in the system encourage the rapid and hasty adoption of new therapies. Manufacturers of products really don't benefit from waiting to conduct the definitive studies to judge their product. They benefit much more from just deploying the product and encouraging its use. If you already have access to the market, you can only lose by testing your product rigorously. You can only have the chance of losing your market share. So we don't see, you know, the strong interest among the biomedical industry testing their own products very rigorously. We want the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. We want third parties to hold these products to that standard. That's what we need from regulatory agencies. But we see regulatory agencies under tremendous pressure to just approve more and more products. And we see some leaders of regulatory agencies celebrating, boy, we approved 20 drugs last year. And that's good. We want new drugs. But the real question is, how many of those drugs improve how long people live, how well they live, how many are certain, and how many are still uncertain? Merely approving new products is not the judge of success. Those have to be products that actually work.
Do you think that medical reversals can really be avoided? I mean, that's a significant shift in the way that people think and do business and just go about their day-to-day.
Right. And that's a great question. I would say that even in the most optimal system, there will be some rate of reversal. There will always be some medical practices that will never be 100% there. Not everything we do will be perfect. But the current rates of reversal that we're tolerating, these are things we've studied in many papers, the rates of reversal we're tolerating are very, very high. They're far higher than the uncertainty of science and statistics. They are as high as they are because there's so much pressure to have a very low bar to debut a medical practice. And if we did a few things to actually test these products a little bit better before they come to market, we would dramatically reduce reversal. You know, the reason I think reversal is so concerning is not only are patients harmed, the patients who undergo the practice during the years it fell in favor, the patients who continue to undergo the practice before doctors change their mind about it and actually are persuaded, but the deepest harm of reversal is loss of trust in biomedicine and science and medicine. And we live at a time where there are so many people who are quick to question science. I disagree strongly with those people. I think science is the best path forward, but we can't give them ammunition by failing to test our own hypotheses rigorously.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today, Dr. Prasad.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.